written on the wind.
Deniola and still Avini.
Wind howling, gunshots cracks, click fingers, chuckles, buzzer, laughing, vehicle approaching, slisky jazz music, crashing, music stops, boy, girl, splash, sobbing, dogs panting, dogs whining and barking. When is it going to end? I don't know. I'm afraid. Laughs, chuckles, woman, phone. Where are you going? I do not know. You are a filthy liar. Laughing, giggling, chuckling and moaning, panting, vehicle approaching, lively music, music continues, muffled, chuckling, laughs, giggles, screeks, screeks, screaking, take me out of this building before I kill someone. You can all rot in hell. Moans, doors shut, engines roaring, tires squeal, lively music, engines roaring, sobs, sobbing, tires squeal, glass shattering, sobs, wind howling, rustling and crashing. Crashing continues, laughs, wind howling. What are we doing here? Where are we? What are we doing here? What are we doing? What are we doing here? Where are we? What are we doing here? What are we doing here? What are we doing? What are we doing here? Where are we? What are we doing here?
Gunshot, wind howling, sobbing. Look how far we've come from the river.
Look how far we've come from the river. Look how far we've come from the river. Look how far we've come from the river. Look how far we've come. Look how far we've come from the river. Look how far we've come from the river. Look how far we've come from the river. Look how far we've come from the Look how far we've come from the river. 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 Oh, look how far we've come from the river.
Possessed with that.
Look how far
we've come from the river. Oh, look how far we've come from the river. Oh, look how far we've come.
And you're listening to CITR FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And it's time right now for the Nardwuar DeHuman Serviette Radio Show.
The Tarnished Angels. Introduction. Engines, airplanes, ravens, hats and coats, smoke and fire, teeth that glitter, sparrows, mouths, confetti, man laughs. Band plays a lively march, laughs, laughs, laughs. I had a nightmare. I was on fire. Knock on door. Jazz music. Noise from party. Raucous laugh. Screaming, raucous laughter, laughter continues. I'm hungry. You are a lonesome, crazy bird. Loneliness makes us lie. What to do? Nobody knows. Some crazy bird. Gulls squalling, engine misfires, screams, sobbing, man sobs. The pythons are screaming, the angels are on fire. The pythons are screaming.
CITR.
on the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show, an interview with Steve Albini. Steve Albini from Big Back Slack, Chicago, and many other bands. Raven! An interview with Steve Albini.
And Steve Albini.
And to prepare you for Steve Albini.
Danny Gava and Steve Albini. Oh my God! Push it!
Who are you?
Steve Albini.
Who are you?
Steve Albini.
Who are you?
Steve Albini.
Who are you?
My name is Steve Albini.
Steve, welcome to Austin, Texas. Right off the bat, Steve Albini, I want to ask you about the importance of this band right here, The Mentally Ill.
The Mentally Ill were a unique and perverse punk band in Chicago. Well, actually in Deerfield, which is a suburb north of Chicago. They were a group of friends who played music and made one fantastic single and then later some other recordings. They played no live concerts during their initial incarnation. And then many years later, they reformed and played a concert or two.
Amazing guitar sound, isn't it?
Yeah, brutal. One of the ugliest sounds ever on record, yeah. This record is a pivotal record in the sound of punk rock, in my opinion.
And you recorded them recently, some weird stuff they wanted recorded.
I recorded them on their reunion phase. I recorded them, I want to say 5, maybe 8 years ago. I don't actually remember how long ago it was.
But they wanted some interesting stuff recorded, didn't they? Like Ty Segall had like a toilet explode. It almost hit your eye, too.
Well, Ty there was an instrumental bridge in one of his songs, and he decided at some point that he wanted to make his record label pay for a toilet so that he could smash a toilet in that section. And the record label were more than happy to go on Craigslist and find him a toilet. And then we smashed a toilet during the instrumental interlude of the song.
And he almost hit your eye, according to the vid that I saw.
I don't remember. I'm sure. Yeah. If there's video evidence of it, then I'm not going to look foolish by saying it didn't happen.
Now, I have a gift for you. Now, I'm not sure if you already have this gift, but I'm giving it to you. Kurt Cobain's journals. Are you aware of his journals, Steve?
I think I was aware that this happened, but I'm not. I've never looked through them. I don't know them.
It's your own copy for you.
Oh, thank you.
Now, if you could please turn to page 227, which is number one. This is Kurt Cobain's journals. Okay. And it has a fax from Steve Albini.
I agree.
What do you remember about that?
I don't recall the circumstances. I'm going to guess that this was after... Well, I couldn't tell you whether this was before or after we started work on the record.
I think it was before you started work on a record.
I believe you.
So there was the facts. Now, on number two, page 228, there is some notes for recording that are provided to Steve Albini. Okay. On number two. And it's actually on page 228. So I guess we turn over the page and here are some notes for recording.
I agree.
And I was curious, don't use a hi-hat.
I don't see.
Make sure there is a carpeted cab. These are Kurt's notes for recording. And I was just curious if you followed the notes at all when you dealt with Kurt Cobain.
This looks like a...
Mr. Producer.
Yeah. This looks like, just based on some of the microphones that have been recommended, these are microphones that I often used on guitar.
What do you think?
It looks like he's transcribing
what you said.
Yeah.
Is this what you do? I was curious, Steve Albini, because these are Kurt Cobain's journals, a gift to you. And I was curious, what do you think of Kurt's sketches? Is it what happened actually when you produced his record?
Some of this, yeah. This actually looks like advice to someone who's recording in a non-professional environment, like how to make a recording environment a little bit more friendly and how to provide some isolation and miking technique, recommended microphones, miking technique. Yeah. Well, this one thing looks odd where it says cut a hole in the bottom of the toms. I don't think I would have suggested that. But the rest of this looks like all like stuff that I might have suggested, like the specific microphones he listed, the Beyer 160 or Beyer 130, RCA BK5, Sheps and Sanken and AKG mics recommended as overheads, not Neumann and not Sennheiser. Yeah, that sounds like me.
So it's pretty much your setup then.
Well, I mean, if you called me and said, could you give me some recommendations for some things to try for recording, I would probably give you similar recommendations today.
Also, Kurt loved, and if we turn to number three,
Big Black. He loved Big Black. Specifically, he liked Big Black.
Oh, this is a Big Black song called Crack Up, which only appeared on a compilation album, a Touch and Go compilation called God's Favorite Dog. That's a deep cut, as they would say, as some people would say. I wouldn't normally say that, but I feel like it's kind of appropriate here.
And it's in Kurt's journals for you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Steve Albini, was it fun recording Nirvana? Did you really light farts on fire?
So there was some fart lighting, but there was also the band got into this thing where they would spill alcohol on things and set it on fire. And one of the things that they spilled alcohol on was Dave Grohl. So there are some Polaroids of Dave Grohl with his ass on fire and things like that.
Who are you?
My name is Steve Albini.
are you?
My name is Steve Albini.
You also loved pranking people. Gene Simmons. Did you phone Gene Simmons?
Gene Simmons actually phoned the studio looking for to speak to the band. He'd been given that number by management or the record label or something. And he called the studio, and Kurt didn't want to talk to him. And he handed me the phone and said, you know, you can deal with him. And I pretended to be Kurt for a while talking to Gene Simmons. And they had a thing set up there where you could record the telephone calls. And so we recorded the conversation with Gene Simmons, where he admitted basically that he wasn't familiar with Nirvana's music or any of the bands that Kurt was sort of friends with. He wasn't familiar with their music.
So Gene thought he was talking to...
He thought he was talking to Kurt Cobain, but he was talking to me.
Yeah, because I one time interviewed Gene Simmons, and he said, oh, I talked to Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, sorry to break the spell there, Gene.
Did you ever meet Scott Litt?
I don't think so.
Because he did some Nirvana stuff after you. What was your dealing with Scott Litt? I was just curious.
I don't think I've ever met him. And I certainly don't have any animosity toward him. I don't think I've ever met him.
Steve Albini, what is the importance of Rocktober fanzine?
Rocktober is a terrific fanzine done by true enthusiasts in the Chicago area. They do a fantastic job of dredging up niche and perverse musical acts of all description. You know, bands with animals in them, bands that that wear costumes, bands that performed with puppets, bands that had inanimate members, things like that.
Steve Albini, Big Black had a drum machine.
Yes, that's true.
Did you play with any rap bands that had drum machines?
Not that I recall.
Did you ever record any drum machines?
Oh, yeah. Quite a few.
Of the rap variety.
I didn't record any rap artists that I mean, a lot of bands incorporate elements of hip-hop and have rapping parts of their songs, but like strictly rap artists, I don't think I've recorded any.
Steve Albini, Ruthless Records. Eazy-E had Ruthless Records, but you had Ruthless too.
Yeah, I don't know which of us had it first. The Ruthless Records that I was involved in was a sort of a cooperative label that was started by the band The Effigies and Naked Ray Gun. And then in the first round of releases, Big Black was also rolled into the initial round of spate of releases on the Ruthless label. The idea was that if all of us independently put out records, we would have more trouble getting paid from the distributors, getting records noticed by the fanzines and such, whereas if we sort of banded together and created a label that could at least pretend to have greater ambition and a larger roster, then we'd be more likely to get paid and get noticed and that sort of thing.
But Ruthless versus Ruthless, did you ever get their mail?
Only once that I recall. There was a videotape toward the very end of the existence of Ruthless Records in Chicago. A videotape was delivered to our post office box that I believe was intended for the other Ruthless Records. But it was a videotape that was being returned from some television station or something. I returned it so that they got it back. So, but only happened once that I know of.
When you were at Abbey Road, was there anything there that you wanted to take home?
They have a truly magnificent collection of microphones. And yeah, I coveted that entire mic closet deeply.
Did you get a chance to meet George Martin at all?
I have met George Martin. I can do an impression of George Martin if you'd like.
Oh, please go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to be George Martin, right? What I'd like you to do is say, excuse me, and get my attention, and then I'll do my impression of George Martin. Okay, of Sir George Martin. This,
as long as it doesn't involve a punch to the head.
You have nothing to fear. So I'm going to look this way, and then you get my attention.
Excuse me, George Martin.
Hello, I'm George Martin.
That's it. That's my impression of George Martin.
Ba-boom. And did he actually do that?
Yeah.
Did he have any idea that you were a recording guy?
I had actually met him once previously, and so I reminded him that I had met him once previously, and then he remembered the circumstances of having met me previously. I don't think he knew that I made records. I don't think he had any reason to suspect that I was there in a professional capacity.
I have another gift for you, and I'm not sure exactly, Steve, if you like getting gifts in your past, or if you have it, the Pansy Division Manada. What do you remember about Manada, and do you collect all the records you have made?
I don't, actually, and I don't have a copy of this record. The Pansy Division, a fantastic punk band, and I remember this. I remember specifically the song Hockey Hair was about... having a fling or having or developing a relationship with someone that you're embarrassed to go out with because he has hockey hair. And I thought, truly, truly terrific band.
Tired of Ugly Fat.
That was the title of a column that I wrote for the music fanzine Matter in the 1980s.
Millions of Dead.
Cops.
Cops.
Yeah.
You weren't too much a fan of that band.
No, they were awful.
Worse than Asshat?
I admire the name Asshat tremendously. I especially admire their logo. I don't know if you're familiar with the Asshat logo, but it's a magnificent drawing of a bowler hat that also looks like an ass with a feather plume coming out of it that also looks like a fart plume. Absolutely magnificent logo. I'm unfamiliar with Asshat's music.
But you don't like MDC too much.
Only because they're bad.
But they're still in the game. They're still in the game. You got to give them that, right?
Okay.
Why didn't you like MDC? I'm just curious.
They were stupid and bad.
Like, who was good? What's the opposite of stupid and bad?
I don't. Do you want me to name a band that I like?
Yeah. What's the opposite of MDC?
I've never really thought about it in those terms, but... do you want me to name a contemporary band of MDC who were great? Is that a band like The X, who we just discussed, actually, would be a really great counterexample.
I'm a prick.
Okay.
Lemmings. TV Waltz. Just...
I believe you have just named some songs by the first band I was ever in, a band called Just Stucky.
Yes, do you remember those songs at all? What was that era like?
Until you refreshed my memory, no, I wouldn't have been able to recall those song titles. We were teenagers. We were learning how to play instruments and learning how to be in a band.
Because at that era, Free Range Zine said you were duct taped to a chair?
Something about that sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
For a review.
I see. I know what happened. What you're describing is a stunt for Forced Exposure fanzine where I was duct taped to a chair and blindfolded. And then Byron Coley, who is one of the editors of the fanzine, played records for me, and I was asked to review them while blindfolded and taped to a chair. I think that's what you're talking about.
Snoopy, Archie the Cockroach.
Snoopy from the Peanuts comic. There was a musical play about Peanuts that my high school put on, and I played the role of Snoopy in that high school production. Archie the Cockroach is a character in a Don Marquis book called Archie and Mehitabel about an alley cat and a cockroach. The cockroach communicates by hurling himself at the keys of a typewriter and leaving short cryptic messages on the desk of the writer Don Marquis.
Did you keep a pet cockroach?
No, although there was a cockroach in a large cockroach, a large dead cockroach in a Ziploc bag who was named Archie in an apartment that I lived in Chicago. Yeah.
Who are you?
My name is Steve Albini.
We'll be right back.
wears Steve Albini guitar straps like you?
Who else wears a guitar strap around their waist? Santiago Durango, the other guitar player in Big Black, adopted the proper guitar strap technique.
The proper?
Yeah. I seem to recall the Australian band The Mark of Cain. I think their bass player adopted the proper method of guitar strap wearing.
Steve Albini, what is the correct way to wear a guitar?
Okay, so if this is my guitar, I would attach one end of the guitar strap here to this end of the guitar, then wrap it around my waist here, and then again around my waist, and then attach it to the upper bout of the guitar, and then the guitar would stay in that position no matter where I turned. The guitar would stay in that position.
Did you at one time work for a bootlegger?
I worked for a company in Chicago that did bootleg T-shirts. Not bootleg records, but bootleg T-shirts. Yeah, and I made bootleg T-shirts for that company. I printed them. I did artwork for him. And the owner of the company would bring me a shirt, and then I would copy it either photographically or mechanically.
What was popular?
At the time, the Stray Cats were very popular. David Bowie, the Let's Dance album, was at the top of the charts. And there were a lot of David Bowie Let's Dance T-shirts. Those are the two big ones that I recall.
What about Jim's 24-hour Polish sausage?
Jim's is a Southside institution in Chicago. It's an all-night sandwich and hot dog stand. And they sell magnificent Polish sausage.
What about Jarritos sodas?
I believe it's pronounced Jarritos. And they're...
Thank you.
Yeah, they're very colorful, sort of nondescript, fruitish flavored soda pop sold in Mexican groceries in Chicago. And they're brightly colored and very... So they add a little spark of gaiety to the kitchen.
Steve Albini, what about fluffy coffee?
Fluffy coffee is a kind of a latte drink that we make at the studio where I work. It's as our resident coffee expert, Taylor Hales, calls it, it's a very dry latte, meaning it's a lot of milk and not a lot of coffee. And the milk is mixed with maple syrup before it's foamed, so you end up with some delicious maple syrup foam, sort of like a marshmallow, on the top of your coffee drink. And the coffee is mixed with cinnamon so that you have there's a whiff of exotica about the coffee flavor. That's all.
You have a special way to cook potatoes? You've mentioned that from a stage when you were playing with shellac, cooking potatoes.
I think somebody asked something about how to cook a potato, and there's a simple way to cook potatoes where they're exceptionally delicious, and that's to boil the potatoes in their skins in heavily salted water. And the heavy salt draws some of the moisture out of the potato, so the potato is fluffier, as well as seasoning the potato.
Interesting. And you also played a roller rink in shellac with baseball uniforms?
It wasn't a roller rink, but during the strike season, the baseball strike season, I want to say it was 94, we put together a show in Chicago that was Six Finger Satellite, Tar, MX-80 Sound, and shellac, and all of the bands had custom baseball uniforms made, and we had the U.S. and Canadian national anthems sung in between bands, and it was a whole baseball-themed event. Yeah.
It was amazing that you worked with the Silver Apples.
Yeah, they were a truly inspirational band for me. I was a big admirer, and it was enormously gratifying to be asked to work on a Silver Apples record.
What about the Cribs? They love drinking, too. Sodas. The Cribs.
You know, on a sort of a normal consumption of sodas basis. Yeah, sure.
What was it like working with the Cribs? They've done a couple albums with you.
Yeah, we get along very well. They're, you know, they're brothers, and so they have a very close rapport within the band. they can communicate in an almost sort of telepathic manner. They don't really need to articulate too many things. They tend to understand what each other want without having to hash things out with arguments or verbalize things too much. Generally speaking, very good-natured people.
I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
Are you doing the Wayne and Garth quote from Wayne's World?
And, of course, I'm not worthy meeting Metal Urbane.
Ah, okay. Metal Urbane, again, a truly inspirational early punk band. From
you love them, don't you? I think you said I'm not worthy.
I would have, yeah. I've met Eric Debris from Metal Urbane, but I've never worked with the band proper, but their early records were, you know, real game changers. They sort of bridged the gap between the sort of pure noise electronic element of experimental music and the sort of driving aggressive punk rock music of the time, and it was at the time it was a unique synthesis.
Jordan from Noise Floor in Vancouver, Victoria, he gave you a Nardwuar pen. Do you remember that?
I do remember. It's a the sort of novelty pen where the bikini comes off as you turn it upside down.
Unfortunately, there is not a bikini. It's just my hair.
Yeah.
Where was that? That was in France or something.
Yeah, I do occasional teaching seminars at a recording studio in France called La Fabrique. The program is called Mix with the Masters, and people buy subscription will come to these seminars to learn recording techniques from various recording professionals, and I've done 5 or 6 of these seminars.
And Jordan brought a Nardwuar pen.
Yeah.
And here we are with me at South by Southwest.
Everything you're saying is true.
Which you kind of said you wouldn't go to before.
Yeah, the reason I'm here was that Kim Deal was going to be here, and she wanted someone to act as her interviewer in a setting where she would be sort of telling her story to the people about, you know, where she was in life and what's up with her new record and that sort of thing. And she asked me to do it, and I'm constitutionally unable to decline something that Kim Deal asks me to do. I'm putty in her hands.
Anything else you'd like to add to the people out there, Steve Albini?
No, I guess I'm slightly envious of the social and political environment in Canada relative to the States at the moment. And I admire your public institutions, and I wish you the best.
Well, thank you very much, Steve Albini. Why should people care about Steve Albini?
I'm doing my best. I don't have any particular sales pitch for myself. I'm just trying to earn an honest living and do what I can to uphold my end of the culture.
Well, thank you very much, Steve Albini. Keep on rocking in the free world and do-do-loot-do.
I agree.
Who are you?
My name is Steve Albini. We'll be right back.
again, you're listening to CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Yeah. Ein Schiff wird kommen. Und das bringt mir den einen, den ich so lieb wie keinen. Und der mich glücklich macht. Ein Schiff wird kommen. Und meinen Traum erfüllen. Und meine Sehnsucht stillen. Die Sehnsucht mancher Nacht. Die Sehnsucht mancher Nacht. Ich bin ein Junge von Piräus. Wenn eines Tags mein Herz sich mal verliert, dann muss es einer sein vom Hafen. Nur so einen Burschen wünsch ich dir denn mir. Schiff wird kommen und das bringt mir den einen, den ich so lieb wie keinen und der mich glücklich macht. Ein Schiff wird kommen und meinen Traum erfüllen und meine Sehnsucht stillen. Die Sehnsucht mancher Nacht, die Sehnsucht mancher Nacht.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Participation, Young Couch Potatoes.
Man, Brenda sends shivers like up my spine. I'd love to date her.
Young Couch Potatoes.
Oh, did we need that extra pepperoni? Pass the chips, pass the chips.
Young Couch Potatoes.
Come on, dude, like, let's change games. Well, I'd love to take Brenda out.
Young Couch Potatoes.
Clue in. She is out. Out cycling with Bobby.
Young Couch.
Eat right. Be active. You'll look and feel great. Participation. Make your move.
Potatoes.
Thank you. CITR. CITR.
Oh.